I think is the most tragic mistake for the taxpayers when the university rid itself in the way it did of the telephone. Now, you tell the telephones, I worked there 20 years, and as far as I can remember, we never had but one rate increase for the residential people, and that was $1 a month. That's how much it went up in 20 years from 1958 to 1977. Now, the business rate might have changed a little more than that, but I remember one residential rate, and that was $1 a month. And I think people regret that, for one thing. And we had right good service. I don't say it's as good as Bell gives now, but it wasn't bad service, was it? I don't think. And we made them. We know Chapel Hill was one of the first companies around, first telephone companies in this area that went to direct distance dialing. It was one of the first that went to seven digit numbers. It was, we was first in a lot of things that people didn't realize. So the place was not dilapidated. The equipment certainly wasn't antiquated. It was the most modern equipment you could buy. And built a telephone exchange on Manning Drive simply for the use of the university. Everything we had in that exchange was university campus. Mm-hmm. Solely the staff and the hospital and the faculty, all the office buildings, all the classrooms and everything, all the offices and the staff on the campus, that was set aside for the university only. Mm-hmm. It was the university exchange. And at the time of the sale, my supervisor says, you old folks don't have anything to worry about. I said, surely they won't sell that university exchange, because he says, there'll be enough of you old people left, you'll still have a job, because we can put you over there. They had the same equipment you had in the Rosemary office, but it was cabled right to the campus and nowhere else. Wasn't in the residential numbers in it at all. Mm. Well, that's what he thought. Well, he thought that they'd never sell that. It would be so stupid for them to do it. They had so much there that most universities would give an arm and a leg to have. Duke was dying to get the same system we did.
Oh, really?
And we had it and gave it away. I sold it for nothing. I saw it. But anyway, it took a few years for them to see the light, but the university now has bought their own equipment and hired the same people that worked for them before from Bell to maintain their own equipment.
Oh, I see. Mm-hmm.
So I think that in itself says it was a tragic mistake. I certainly have to sell the university part of it. And the same way, I've heard this water business since 1968. The man doing a lot of our construction work, we had to stop him. And I remember the first pipeline they built to Durham, the man was doing our work, laying duct lines for the telephone company, had to stop his work and dig a ditch from University Lake to Durham water supply. To get it, you know, that I think Durham agreed to sell them 1 million gallons a day during that drought in 68. And you've heard drought every year since then. And then they come along with this Cane Creek Reservoir, you know, that's going to solve everything. And they've known from the very beginning that it was a temporary solution to a permanent problem. And the only solution to it is to tap the Jordan Lake. Enough water there for everything. This dam they built up here is going to destroy a lot of farms. The dam in itself won't hurt anything, but what will they do about the surrounding area? I mean, that's where it's going to hurt. And of course, it won't affect me, but it'll affect a lot.
I was going to ask you, none of your land will be underwater then?
No.
Is any of your land up close within?
I'm in the what they call the watershed. But I'm a long ways, I'm on the outskirts of that. I think they consider the watershed starting right down here and going that way. But the danger part of this lake is, you see, farmers now farm with a lot of herbicides. They have to spray this crop. And they stop them from spraying, they're out of business.
Oh, so that's then one of the biggest problems.
See, it's not the lake in itself, it's not the loss of it. Of course, the tear is suffering a great loss when and the staffers, of course, I don't think it made much difference to them. But the tear boys really suffered a loss. They lost productive areas to the lake,
mm-hmm.
and that hurts. But most of the people, Cecil Crofton, there, may lost some land, but it's not going to bother them due to their situation. I mean, they're in a retirement situation anyway. But it's what they're going to do with the control area around the dam, telling you what you can plant and what you can spray and what you can't spray. I think that's a true danger, and it's the control of the area. It may never amount to a lot, but you can imagine the worst, you know, sometimes.
How did you first find out that they were going to put the dam in? I understand there was some kind of hearing that
it was
just announced.
Well, I think it all started Governor Scott appointed a church commission. The church commission met, you know, in public session several times. That was the beginning of the trouble right there.
Mm-hmm.
He hand appointed his people to make a determination whether the utilities should be sold. And Governor Scott told me straight up and down. I mean, we had him up here. See, he was a close friend of some local people here.
Oh.
Personal friend. And they gave him an appreciation supper up here one night while he was governor. And the rumor was around then that the utilities was going to be sold. So I went to the supper that night. In fact, everybody carried a covered dish and had enjoyed it. He made a nice talk. I told my boss when I left work that day, I said, well, I'm going to see Governor Scott tonight. I said, mm-hmm. What do you want me to ask him? And he thought I was joking, you know. I said, I'm serious. I said, we have a chance. I said, I'm going to ask him straight up and down, is he going to sell you the telephone company? And then he really believed me. And he said, well, ask him this and that and the other. I said, no, I'm just going to ask him one simple question. And after the supper, everybody was going up to speak to him, and I did. I just walked right up to him. I said, Governor Scott, I want to ask you one question. I said, are you going to sell a telephone company in Chapel Hill? He thumbed his button. He said, not only am I going to sell a telephone company, he said, I'm going to sell the whole utility, all the utilities.
So that's how you found out.
And I said, why? He said, because the university is not in the utility business, they're in the education business.
Mm-hmm.
That was quote, word for word, that Governor Scott told me. And he meant it. But it was a poor move, I'll tell you that. And then he appointed this commission, and they allowed some of us employees to go up there and sit during the session. It was called a church commission. And one or two from each group went up and were able to sit during the meetings. And that was the biggest sham I have ever seen in my life. It was cut and dried, and Governor Scott's uncle, you know, was the chairman of it.
Mm.
And he said so, you know. He said, this is a stacked deck. That was his quote. He said, regardless of what the study commission decides on, it's going to be sold. Well, some of them voted the minority. Several voted. There wasn't one man there that come to do his job, and that was a representative from Mecklenburg County, and his name was Elder. And he said, this is crazy. He said, I don't see any reason in the world for selling it. And that's when he suggested that they appoint a committee of directors and let them run it separate like the hospitals run.
Mm-hmm.
It was like Ralph Scott said, it was cut and dried. It was decided, and this was just a formality they were going through. But anyway, it was sold, and the Michigan State University had lost a lot of money at the start of it.
Mm-hmm.
And that led up to the water deal. You first they wanted to get rid of the telephone, they wanted to get rid of the power, but they actually wanted to keep a finger in the water. And they did. Yeah. They still have, you know, because they claim it has a, they have a rowing class, and it was necessary for them to keep the water, the lake.
So the rowing class was the reason they gave the that's interesting. I didn't know that either.
It was part of an educational process. The lake is used as part of the educational process, so they maintain the water and the rights to use it as a part of the educational process.
Well, how did the community here, your association, how did it get started, and what do they?
Well, it
was they put up a good fight, haven't they?
Yeah, a real good fight. I think it's sad that nobody ever recognized that the university is still, you can't win. It's a no-win proposition when you're fighting as big a thing as the state and the university. And of course, the lawyers, I brought that question up at one of the meetings. I said, but you realize here, you're not only fighting Billings and his crowd, the Orange Water and Sewer. I said, you got the university contending. Oh, no, the university had nothing to do with it. Lawyer, if that's all you know, we'll never win the case. And of course, that was the situation. There's no way, unless you recognize who your enemy was, there's no way to fight it.
How did the Cane Creek Association get started?
I think it was the people that was affected the worst, the Tier Boys, I think, was the one that Santa Crawford was living. Of course, he's right there at the site, you know. Mm-hmm. It don't affect him. And I think they generated enough interest, had several community meetings.
Where did they meet?
At the community building. Mm-hmm.
Have you gone to meetings or involved with it?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. And they had bake sales. They had all kinds of fundraising affairs and donations. Yeah, I've donated to it. I believed in it. I believed in conserving the community. And Sam has done a lot of work on it. Mm-hmm.
I've met him.
Yeah, he prepared a lot of slides. Everything that he done, I thought, was commendable. I think it proved the point. I just think that, just like Scott said to start with, it's a stacked deck. Mm-hmm. You can't, they've made up their mind that they're going to sell the utilities, and they've made up their mind they're going to build Cane Creek. Mm-hmm. They're going to build a reservoir at Cane Creek because it was good water.
That's what I understand, that it's
well, yeah. Any water is good if you got purified. I mean, they found out now that Jordan Lake, they said Jordan Lake was going to be a cesspool, you know. And it's no such thing. It's not as bad. It's not bad at all.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing like as bad as the water. Of course, the Hall River may dump into it. I don't know. But Hall River is the most polluted river in the country. And the Pittsburgh, people in Pittsburgh and Montague and all down that way uses the water. It hasn't. I wouldn't want to use it. I'm glad we don't have to drink water out of the hall. But
I've heard people say that. They don't want to drink water.
But Jordan Lake is just, as, my opinion, finally boiled down. That may not in my lifetime, but everybody around here is going to have to depend on Jordan.
Eventually.
For water. Yeah. Down the road, I'm talking about Federal and all the little town of Sanford, all down that way. They're going to look to Jordan Lake for survival. And Chapel Hill will too, and they just well. They built one pipeline deal for two to Durham, one out 54 to the Rock Choir. And I don't understand why they didn't see the handwriting on the wall. And they say right now they conceive that Cane Creek Reservoir will be no good no longer than the turn of the century anyway.
Oh my.
So they know it's a temporary solution. They acknowledge that.
Mm-hmm.
They had so many alternatives, I think. Chatham County offered. I've got a brother-in-law that lives down in the Mount Pleasant community, and there's just the greatest watershed right behind his farm, and the land's available, and it produced certainly produced water a whole lot closer by than Cane Creek and be a whole lot more of it. And I don't know of anybody that'll objected, why they didn't pursue some of these places that would do the less damage. But potentially it has a means of destroying this community as far as agricultural.
It'll destroy the agriculture in the community.
Yeah, it'll destroy. See, this is one of the best dairy producing parts of the state, maybe the best. The production in this community is great.
And what do you, if the dam goes in as they plan, what do you suppose these dairy farmers are going to do?
Well, I think, like one person put it to one of the young boys, see, these boys are reared on their farm, and when they become of age, when they reach college age, every one of them went to state college and took courses in animal husbandry and farming, and they're experts in that field, the way I look at it. They're educated in that field, just as much so as a doctor or a nurse or anybody else. Would, you know, that. And now to tell one of these young fellows, buddy, you won't be farming 10 years from now. And I heard that on tape. And I don't know whether it was county commissioner or who it was, but anyone, one of them told him, said, son, you won't have a farm 10 years from now. And there he's got third generation. To tell a young kid that right after he's finished college, started the family, built a home. Now that's enough to upset anybody. And some of them that makes these decisions don't understand. It's not a matter of selling this house and lot and going down the street and buy you another one.
Mm-hmm.
You're talking about three generations that's been on this land and has each one of them has improved on what the last one did. And it's a three-generation thing, really, to get a successful farm like these fellows got up here now. It's a business. It's not a farm. It's a big business. It is a big business. And every one of them have followed in their father's footsteps. I mean, they've improved. Each generation has improved till it's a beautiful situation, the way I look at it.
I understand some of the newcomers have been active with your association also.
Oh, yeah. We have a professor at the university. I believe his name is Ed Johnson. He's a math professor. And he has led the fight. He's been one of the best. And he's affected more than... I mean, he's got a beautiful home built in the watershed. And it'll probably back water up to his back door.
Mm-hmm.
The Vernon home site.
What is it they want to say that they're not informed? They must see something here that they think should be saved.
In the environment. Yeah. Wildlife. They'll take a trip up Cane Creek, you see, the natural habitat. Ones that's not related to farming, I'm sure that they just hate to see the countryside learn the tranquility of the forest and the beauty of the things and down the Cane Creek.
Did you know the newcomers before this happened, this crisis came up?
Well, yes, I knew Mr. Johnson real well. I've known him before this came up. Yes, he's been here quite some time. Just a good leader. I mean, he's a well-educated person. He knows how to, he has a good vocabulary and a good choice of words, and he's very intelligent, too, and that's what you need. Mm-hmm. You need somebody like that.
Now, the people who came out here for privacy, have they been involved in resisting the dam being built here? Are they still
by and large, I'd say yes. You don't know them a lot of times, but I've been to several meetings, and I don't know a third of the people there.
Oh, really?
I never did learn who all of them were. But this is a protesting society we live in. I can get out here and put a sign on my shoulder, and I'll create a lot of interest in a little bit. I can protest the way a crow flies, and I can get a gathering right quick.
Is that part of what's attracted them to this?
I think so. I think it's just a period of society now where everybody likes a good argument, a good means of protest and reason for protest. I think that figures into it too, but basically if you listen to our side, I don't even have to say our side,
mm-hmm.
I imagine a person, an impartial person, could sit and listen to both sides, and I think 90% of people would say that the people out here being done wrong by this. I still feel like maybe that it's not going to be as terrible as everybody seems to think it is, unless they exercise too much control and domination over a person's property and put a buffer zone around it and say you can't, for environmental reasons, you cannot spray this field of corn next year because it's going to get into the watershed and go into the lake. For that reason, you cannot spray this field of corn. When you tell a man that, you just well cut his arms and legs off. He's done. You got thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars worth of equipment. It's no good. You can't use it. Well, I hope I hadn't talked too much.
No, I've enjoyed it. I have learned so much about it. I just really had one more question. That was, when people read about this and hear about it all, what those of us that don't live here or that aren't farmers, what would you really want them to understand about life here that people want to save?
Well, I think we have a unique community in that it's a very few that left intact as much as it is, and I think that to be destroyed is a lot of, you take for instance this farm here, this is the fourth generation here now, and I've got these grandchildren of mine to be the fifth generation, and it's a lot of virtue in that, I think, and you see that eroded and destroyed. It's just, but as far as the community, now going back to your question, you meant the value of the community?
Whatever you think is most important here should be saved.
I think the quality of people. I don't think you'll find a better quality of people in the country anywhere. There's good communities everywhere. There's good people everywhere. But by and large, you won't find a better bunch, and a better group, or a better quality of personalities and people in the state or anywhere else in the country than are here, right here in this community. That's about as simple as I can put it.
Quite a profound statement.
If you need them, they're there. And they don't interfere with your business. If you want to live a life secluded, that's your business. They don't bother you. If you need them, though, they're there to help you. I found that to be the truth. And, you could take that two or three different ways. If a person is selfish enough to want to live by himself and then he needs help, you might say, well, let him suffer the way he's lived. If he's brought this on himself, let him. But that's not the case here. If you need your neighbor, regardless of whether you're on a personal basis, a one-to-one relationship with anybody, they don't ask questions, they come to help. I think the fire department, the community fire department, is the example of that. These boys volunteer their service. They risk their life. People they don't know. They got no other reason to go out there. They're not getting paid a dime for it. But they go. They're helping their fellow man.
Mm.
And I think that's what makes it such a unique place to live.
Well,
that's just one example of the fire department. That mm-hmm. if you have trouble and need help, you've got neighbors.
That is special. It's very special.
It is.
Especially nowadays.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, concerned.